And vitality to you and to the swines. I'm your co-host Scott Patton, along with Martin Patella. Hey, Martin, we kicked this one a couple episodes ago, or last episode, I forget when it was, about the swine flu and all the rest of it. And unfortunately, the Canadians haven't been listening to us because they just announced that a swine flu vaccine will be ready by the fall. Local scientists expect to have a vaccine seed in a few weeks, a sign that an H1N, that's the name of the flu, will be ready by fall. Dr. Frank Plummer, scientific director of the Winnipeg-based National Microbiology Lab, doesn't that sound impressive, said scientists are rushing to develop the vaccine so it will be ready to roll out in time for the annual flu season. Like, you know, that's like 8 months from now, right? Changes in the influenza viruses are difficult to predict, but Plummer said he thinks the vaccine will protect against the current strain. Earlier this week, a team of scientists cracked the genetic code of the H1N1 influenza virus, also known as swine flu. Plummer said the DNA sequence will help scientists understand how the virus works and how it changes in humans. Great. It'll change and change and change. That's good. The people here have risen to the occasion and worked incredibly well as a team trying to get to the bottom of this problem, Plummer said at a news conference at the lab Thursday morning. World Health Organization officials warned Thursday that one-third of the world's population, 2 billion people, would be infected if the human swine flu goes pandemic.
Whew. Right.
I think we need to panic.
So Scott, yes, be afraid,
let's panic.
But, you know, this is the thing that gets to me so much, because the news media are just whipping up this frenzy. So let's start with the word pandemic.
Yes.
Pandemic means that a lot of people get it, that it goes human-to-human transmission, and that it goes wide. It does not indicate anything about the severity. I mean, you could all be sneezing.
And that's a pandemic.
And it's a pandemic by definition. And that's why they're going from stage 5 to possibly stage 6, because it's, you know, it's transferred readily. But, you know,
Let's talk about the pandemic a little bit more. What's the difference between a pandemic and a epidemic?
Well, epidemic is that in one epicenter, in some place, you have a whole bunch of people sick with something.
Okay.
And pandemic, pan is in the Greek word for everywhere, you know, like Pan-American or Panavision or whatever. That means that it's everywhere. So now we go from epidemic to pandemic. So we have it, instead of localized, we have it worldwide.
See, because pandemic to me sounds way scarier than epidemic. That must be worse than an epidemic. And an epidemic, I know, is bad. So
And yet, you know, like I could have an epidemic of sneezing, and it's going to be declared a pandemic because everybody's going to sneeze.
Right.
So that's the one point, is that the news media folk are just loving it, because this word has such a loaded meaning. It has such a scary weight to it, and yet it's nothing. The substance behind it is empty. It's just another big puffed up nothing.
Right, and before we get into kind of our response to that, I have one other question for you, and that is this. Let's suppose, for example, the swine flu became this massive problem that the news said it's going to become, right? And that, you know, it's like this thing, that the Spanish thing that happened in 1918, where millions of people died, which was a terrible tragedy. And let's say the swine flu became kind of today's equivalent of that. 8 months from now, when the vaccine comes out, is the swine flu that they made the vaccine to kill the same swine flu that's going to be around 8 months, or will it have mutated already and be something totally different?
Well, that's the crapshoot. They cannot know. They are saying they cannot know, and they're hoping that it's broad enough to get it. But I'll come back to that point. What I wanted to say was that, you know, with all the respect to all of these guys who work in that territory, in that environment, in the science, you know, Stephen Covey has got a phenomenal example of what I'm trying to say in his book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And it has everything to do with strategic versus tactical thinking. And he talks about management versus leadership. And he defines management as somebody who teaches you how to sharpen your machete, and somebody who teaches you a better swing and teaches you personal motivation and staying on job and all of that in your effort to cut a wonderful path through the jungle. Leadership, on the other hand, is the guy who climbs up on the highest spot in the whole terrain and says, "Hey guys, you're going in the wrong direction. Over there, east, not north." Mm. And so that's what we have here, is these people are researching and chasing this one thing. They're trying to eliminate this one virus. They're trying to attack the virus. It's like another wonderful metaphor to me is, you know, to a man with a hammer, most everything looks like a nail.
Every problem looks like a nail, yeah.
And these people understand that they would like to find the culprit and hit him. And here, on the other side, in the natural wellness, in the pleomorphic terrain, in cellular terrain management universe, we're saying, why don't we just strengthen the immune system? Why don't we just put a systemic antiviral support into the body? And I don't really care if you're H1N1 or H2N7. We're covered.
Here's the thing. When you have tons of people dying in, say, developing countries because, say, a monsoon has gone through and it's disrupted their water system and flooded them out and everything else. And
cholera by the thousands or something like that.
Something like that. You're really talking about what happens when people are living in squalor and they have, you know, they're not eating properly, they're not sleeping properly, they're tired, they're worn down, they're exhausted, they're starving, they're thirsty.
Yeah, malnourished, malnourished immune system, compromised, all of that.
Yeah, so, and what I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, if somebody was relatively, you know, was healthy and they were exposed to that particular germ that was, you know, in the air in the unhealthy environment, and then they went back into their healthy environment, they probably would, you know, okay, you know, get a cold or something, and then they'd be fine because their immune system would be able to handle it. But when you put people into impossible situations and you basically knock down all their defenses, then how can they protect themselves from the, what's going on in the environment?
Yeah, well, points to be made. These same Canadians that you're writing about, there are currently 1,500 or 1,600 known cases, one of them serious enough to warrant hospitalization.
I think you should say that again.
Just to
reinforce
all of
that.
All of Canada, which is 30 million people, so that's, you know, 1/10 of United States.
Yeah, California.
California size, have identified 1,500 or so at this point cases of swine flu.
Okay.
One of which was serious enough to require hospitalization.
So less than 0.1%.
Well, never mind anything. I mean, it's not even bad enough to go to a hospital. And this one person that got in trouble probably was weak enough with who knows what else.
More people died in car accidents today in Canada than even went to the hospital with the swine flu problem.
Yes. How many children have died of hunger in sub-Saharan Africa today?
Yeah. I suppose I could look that up, but I think I did
other
day.
I know. It's a huge, ugly number, and it certainly is more than the 1,500 cases of swine flu in all of Canada. And all of this time and effort and the research dollars that have been thrown at this and all of this clamor and, you know, like these pharmaceutical companies that are just paddling as hard as they know how to develop something. I mean, the direction, you know, where's the leadership? Where's the leadership saying, come on, guys, you're heading in the wrong direction to begin with?
Well, it strikes me as, again, we keep coming back to big business and big pharmacy, and the answer to everything is in a pill and not in a good lifestyle. And that's, to me, is, I guess, one of the things we're going to keep harping on over and over again is there's lots of natural alternatives that will always work because, you know,
yes.
it's not like...
I need to ask this or play this out one more time. Scott, if there are rats in your back alley and you're an MD, what are you going to do?
Get a cat?
Maybe.
Put out rat poison?
Yeah, you put out rat poison. And you get a gun.
Yeah, and you,
and you start shooting the rats.
Traps down.
Yeah, you lay out traps. You lay out poisons and traps and guns.
Yeah, and what you're, I guess what I don't do, what I will never ever consider doing, is getting the garbage truck to come and take all the garbage away and clean the place up.
No, because that's not part of your solution.
Yeah.
You're only focusing on the symptoms. You never focus on the cause. Because in the medical premise is removal of symptoms equals a cure.
Right. Removal of symptoms equals a cure. And we know that is not the case.
No. That's like sticking the chewing gum over top of that red flashing light on your dashboard.
Yeah. I was thinking, too, of, you know, somebody comes in with cancer or whatever, and they give him chemotherapy, and they say, yeah, we cured the cancer, and he comes back a little while later, and his liver has stopped working, and he dies from liver problems. They say, well, he didn't die from cancer. He died from liver problems, so we fixed the cancer.
Yep. Success.
Success. So... what are some of the things that we could do, you know, to protect ourselves, to get our immune system up, or, you know, okay, I feel you know, a little piggish, and I've got a runny nose and a sore throat and maybe a bit of a fever, so I might have this swine flu thing coming on. What should
I
do?
Well, you know, I think I must be a genius because about 3 months ago we launched a product called FluStop.
Yes. I should have called it swine flu stop.
No, that would be just too ridiculous. But anyway, flu stop is actually badly named. I don't think they'll get away with it for long. They cannot have a product name they cannot have a condition name in the product name, or else FDA will never approve it.
Mm.
But anyway, they call it flu stop successfully right now, and so be it. I don't think that the next batch of the product is going to have that same name.
You'll hear a message from us one of these days saying, remember when we were talking about flu stop? Well, now it's called something, whatever it is, we'll tell you what it is.
It's going to be a viral stomper or something.
Viral stomper, yes. Perfect.
But anyway, the point of that is that product based on herbal stuff, old Chinese ideas, is very effective at inhibiting viral multiplication. It just kills off the influenza A virus ability to reproduce. Ta-da!
Nice.
So, you know, if I take your ability to reproduce away, the worst you can do for me is just kind of tickle my throat.
Yeah. There's no growth.
No growth. Just, you know, it's going to be about as bad as it got by the time you started spraying this thing in the back of your throat.
Yeah.
The second thing, and this is funnier than funny, is a Twilight America product called Topically Every Pain. I don't know if I regularly spray it on my belly because I use it for magnesium and iodine supplementation, but. I don't know. Have you had any encounters with this one?
No.
You don't remember. It smells sort of like a wet dog when you spray it on. It's kind of funny. I've had people tell me, "Oh, I couldn't possibly use this. This smells just disgusting. How could I stink myself up?" although I have one woman, she called me up and she says, my children love it. I take them out of the bath, put them on the bed, and they stink up their feet with topically every pain. Of course, what that does, because this product has valerian root and golden seal and St. John's Wort in it. It's wonderfully calming, relaxing, improving moods, and at the same time preventing infection.
Okay.
I mean, that's you can probably quote some stuff about golden seal root. You know, it's a world well renowned and known antiviral, antibacterial, and antiseptic, right?
Yeah, well, it's been used by Native American healers for a wide range of ailments, and they used it if there was local inflammation and infections, and it was also used as an antiseptic, an antibacterial, and antiviral. So, you know, it helped with the digestive system as well. So, you know,
yeah.
when the natives had colds or flus, respiratory problems, congestion, ulcers, or constipation, that was the route that they went to. They've used it for centuries and centuries.
That's right. And that's the good thing. It was working then, and that's going to continue to work even when all the antibiotics and all the vaccines and all of that has completely blown itself out.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a universal inhibitor. You know, like the power of creation, everything has its own antidote in nature. We don't have to invent it. It's already there. All we have to do is find it.
That's right. That's right.
And use it.
And use it, yeah. So,
but of
yeah,
course, there's too little money to be made on golden seal root spray. In fact, you know, it's such a joke. We sell this 4-ounce bottle for $25. And actually, I'm going to put it on sale this week. For all of our listeners, if you stay with us to the end of the podcast, I'm going to give you a code where you can get it for $20 instead of for $25. Anyway, I wanted to quote this fellow. He called me up and he said he would take this topically every pain and spray it straight into the back of his throat, right from the atomizer.
Wow.
And I say, brave man. But then I tried it myself, and you know what's funny? Is that when you throw it, when you blow it to the back of the mouth while missing the tongue, you actually don't taste this crazy thing.
Wow. I can't imagine it. I mean, it would be worse than Buckley's.
Yes, it would be worse than Buckley's, but effective. But works. It's amazing how effective that advertising campaign of Buckley's is.
That's right. That's right.
It's amazing.
Well, and the other thing that's in the topically every pain that I think it's important to mention, because we talk about this all the time, is it's full of magnesium.
Right, of course. Yeah, that's the primary carrier there. Magnesium is the delivery mechanism on it. Gosh, we've talked about magnesium so much, it's not even funny.
Yeah, if you're not taking magnesium, and we say it topically, actually you had somebody ask you a bit about that, maybe we should say this again, is if you take magnesium supplementation and you stick it in your mouth, in order for you to get enough for your body to absorb it to make a difference, you would, the other result of taking that much would be the runs, like it would just go right through your body because you'd have diarrhea, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the typical bowel tolerance for magnesium is somewhere around 2,000 milligrams a day, which is about 3 teaspoons of this.
And not enough.
Well, it's barely enough for daily maintenance.
Yeah.
It's, you know, if you have a deficit, if you're like magnesium depleted and you're trying to bring your levels up, there's no getting there without having constant diarrhea, or else use transdermal magnesium, which is the way to do it. Either as a bath crystal and foot soaks or full bath, or as these spray-ons, massage-ons, magnesium oil or gel, or the topically everything. Personally, I use the topically everything all the time because it has the alfalfa and kelp extracts in it. So I get the instant benefit of the amino acids and minerals from both kelp, which is from the seawater, oceans, and alfalfa, which is from the land. Alfalfa is another really amazing plant. You know, alfalfa roots go deep, like 20 to 30 feet deep.
Wow.
It's insane. I mean, you know, most plants are 4 to 6 inches, you know, mm-hmm. a little bit more. I mean, even when you see these, you know, 100-foot or 200-foot trees topple after the wind, yeah. you see their root system, and there's nothing there. It's just
very very shallow.
Like, yeah, shallow, like 1 foot deep at most, right? And there's this giant. But not alfalfa. You know, alfalfa grows like 2 to 3 feet tall on the field, but it's 20 to 30 feet deep on the root system.
Wow.
So it gets the minerals from deep down. Even when the soil is depleted, alfalfa always is loaded with minerals.
Yeah, because it goes below where the depletion occurs.
That's correct.
The name alfalfa means father of all foods.
And yeah, that's an Arabic word. Yeah.
Yeah, and the Arabs, they used it to feed their horses, claiming that it increased the speed and strength of the animals, and it's huge.
Absolutely. It's, and of course you can have horses or cows live on straight alfalfa hay. There's a huge amount of protein in alfalfa, and of course the mineralization is legendary. Hmm. So that's why I use topically everything. I use it to give myself a mineral and amino acid supplement every day, transdermally.
Yeah, so through the skin as opposed to orally.
Yep. Yes, although it appears that this fellow, and I'm ever so grateful to him, I wasn't going to try it myself, but after he told me he's doing it, I thought, oh yeah, I'll do it. I'll try anything. It's quite bearable. I certainly wouldn't do it on a 5-year-old child, but a fully functioning adult, not a wuss and a wimp, can do it.
Right. Well, and we had a nice testimonial from a lady in BC, Canada, about topically everything. I wanted to share that with everyone as well. And she goes, Dear Martin, I'm a middle-aged, fairly active woman, and I recently had the opportunity to go water skiing. And I can remember when I used to water ski all the time. It's an activity that I'd seldom done in the last decade, and this resulted in one particularly very sore arm muscle. So before bed, I applied topically everything 2 times. In the morning, my arm was so much better. It was as if a few days of healing had passed. Truly amazing. So
there's...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. No, never mind.
I was going to say... I love it when we talk at the same time. What I was going to say is there's another example of, you know, putting something on your skin that has a healthy benefit. And it just blows my mind when I hear doctors say, oh, no, you can't put anything on your skin. Because, I mean, they prescribe nicotine patches and all this other stuff. So they know
that stuff gets in.
That just amazes me.
Oh, yeah, we had this conversation just recently, right? There was this friend of yours who was saying, oh, I don't think that has anything possible. Yeah.
Yeah, and her sister, of course, had a bath in magnesium salts, and if you have too much magnesium, you get heart palpitations, and you just kind of, this was happening to her. I said, well, it couldn't have been from the magnesium because your body doesn't absorb anything, right? She says, well, my sister doesn't know what she's talking about.
Oh, isn't that wonderful when you get to pull off one of those?
It is. It's like, yes!
I scored.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so what do we tell the world? This is one of the better things you can do. We have 3 products in this Twilight America, topically every pain, which is the one with the golden seal, topically everything, which is just the alfalfa and kelp, and then we have the golden seal drops, which is just straight golden seal for the brave folks who would like to add it to their daily tea or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you go to the Life Enthusiast Co-op website, which is at www.life-enthusiast.com, and click on, I guess, brands, and then go down to Twilight America, you'll see an introduction, all sorts of information about it, including a 6-day challenge, and information about those three particular products. And I think we should do something for that. Well, Martin, I think you're going to do something for everybody, right?
Absolutely. I've got the code ready. It's TEP for topically every pain, 20 for 20% off. So if in the exit you type in TEP20, the three products that I'm qualifying on this is the topically every pain, topically everything, and the golden seal drops.
Cool.
Enjoy.
Yeah, and just fill it in.
Stock up. Stock up on your thing, yeah.
Yeah. Fill it in where it says coupon code. Just put TEP20 in there, and you'll get 20% off. Awesome. That's a great deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, you... you will never be a swine for taking topically every pain.
This thing, you know, I do want to say this without being too crazy. I actually appreciate the researchers, you know, these people who get to go to work and think, you know, and spend the time really trying to make the humanity suffer less, you know, like they really do that, and they are good people. It's just that they're paddling in the wrong direction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their leadership is misguided, or there isn't any. I actually just heard that China, if it's a whole country or some province, banned the importation of pork from Alberta because there is a particular herd in Alberta of pigs that got infected by this flu.
Mm.
Oh yeah, and then some German official from the World Health Organization put out this message that says, "Don't eat pork products because we don't really know if the virus would survive on the pork or not." Well, I am glad for it because I'm no advocate for eating pork, but I think it's just about as stupid as it gets.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question, Martin. If there was a virus. And let's say, for example, you cooked the meat to, I guess it would be 400 degrees Fahrenheit. Would that kill
it?
Would it survive?
Yeah, it would just kill it so dead that it couldn't be deader. I mean, absolute certainty. I mean, you'd have to be licking the meat before you cook it.
I was going to say, licking the raw meat before you cooked it in order to get any. I mean, it's just ridiculous when you cook something. This is one of our complaints, isn't it, also? Like,
yeah,
we're
absolutely
eating dead meat. You know, there's nothing living in it. That's why people go, like, have you seen there was a YouTube video where this guy, he went to McDonald's and he bought two burgers and he left McDonald's, he stuck one burger in his jacket, ate the other burger, got home, took the jacket off, hung it up, and didn't wear the jacket for a year.
And of course, found it. Yes.
And he found it and he pulled it out and it looked exactly the same as it did, I can't believe it, but a year earlier. So then he went back to McDonald's and he had basically all of these burgers that were like, you know, a year old, 6 months old, 3 months old, and we started creating this collection.
Yes.
And he did this video on this thing. These things were not decomposing. There was nothing living in them.
Yeah.
And so here you've got all these people saying, we're not going to eat pork, or we're not going to eat this, we're not going to eat that, because when you cook it, you might get the flu, and we're going, what type of misinformation are these people spreading?
Yeah, and this is the World Health Organization. I mean, this is the, I mean, my words are not coming together to express the astonishment that I feel at the stupidity at that level.
So, can we do a little digression here? Similar type of topic, but has nothing to do with health. That just I found out the other day just blew me away.
Yeah.
One of the major, major environmental catastrophes that has occurred and is occurring and is ongoing comes from used tires. All of these tire people, you know, they wear down the tires. They're not good anymore. They take them to the tire shop. The tire puts people put new tires on. What happens to the old tires? There's like 20 square miles of tires, like 100 feet high, in these different spots around the United States. One of them went on fire, okay,
yes,
for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Right? They're black. You know, the sun beats down, they combust, right? It took them 4 months to put the fire out. Okay, so this isn't like a small problem, right?
No.
So what do you do with these tires? And so in Arizona, this company figured out that they could break, you know, crush up the tires or, you know, cut them into small little pellets, mix them in with the asphalt, and put them on the roads. And what would happen is, you know how if you're in a place today where it gets really cold, you see tons of cracks happening in the roads all the time, right?
Yes.
Well, with the rubber road, as I call it, it mm-hmm. expands and contracts with the temperature, so it never cracks, right?
Yeah.
So this is what they did, and they did it in Flagstaff, Arizona, so it gets hot, but it also gets cold. They put it up not like 6 months ago, not a year, you know, a couple weeks ago or whatever. They did 7 years ago. They did one half of a highway for, I don't know, 20 or 30 miles with this stuff, and then they did the other half the way you normally did it, 7 years ago, right? The half that they did 7 years ago, perfect. It looks brand new. The other half, well, you can imagine, you know,
it's all worn and beat, yeah.
Yeah, cracked like crazy, right? Yeah. So the senator for Arizona says, you know what? This is a solution to two problems. One is constantly repaving roads that are cracking, and two, getting rid of all of this environmental disasters that are occurring all over the country, because it didn't just, you know, one place.
Yeah, this is a massive problem.
It's a massive problem. When you think of how many people are on the roads with cars and how many cars have to change tires, it's just incredible. So they went and they were actually going to make a law that you had to use like 20% rubber or something in your
pavement.
And the road building lobby managed to get the thing squished. First of all, I didn't know there was a lobby for that, but there was. So on this show,
and why is that? Because the roads would not need repair, and we want the work. We can't have roads that last 20 years.
Yeah, and it's funny because they interviewed one of the guys who did the lobbying, and it was like, well, we don't want to be told what to do, right? What?
Yeah.
You know? And, no, we're not saying there's anything wrong with it. We just don't want to be told how to do our job, and we think we do a really good job. And it's like, what are you talking about? But basically, the rubber roads, if a regular road is 4 inches thick, a rubber road is 2 inches thick. The regular road lasts for, you know, X amount of years. The rubber road doesn't seem to ever stop lasting, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just thought, oh, man, you know, just this all this misinformation that gets out there and people not doing what's in the, you know, the best and highest good of everybody. I mean, wouldn't it be, I mean, I'm sorry if you're out of work because there's no more roads to repair.
Well, we could build new roads, man.
Or we could find something else that you could do that would be of value, not...
But, you know, this is so dunderheaded because, of course, they're trying to protect what they have as opposed to think forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same crew, if we have the same road building budget and we no longer have to spend it on fixing stupid roads that are broken, we could actually build new roads. Or we could deploy these guys to pave the driveways or do whatever the heck we want elsewhere, else how. But because these people have this limited, idiotic, self-interested thinking, they squash it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no city in the world where you can't walk around and say, you know what, here's a whole area that we could really, you know, improve a lot on. And just take the money from repairing roads, not talking about new roads, but from repairing old roads, put it into fixing up, you know, parks or...
Okay, Scott, so we have a movement. Where do I sign up? I mean, we need to go there and we need to, overcome the problems in Arizona and everywhere else.
Well, no, in Arizona, they've got it fixed. They're putting rubber roads down. The other thing, too, which is really strange about this, is they interviewed the guy who put down that highway, right? The actual guy that made it and everything. He says, you know what? This stuff is so easy to work with. It's so fast. It's so, like, oh, he was just, he said, I would never go back to the old way of doing it. right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So there's the guy, you know, once they understand, it's just like, oh, this is doesn't smell as bad, it doesn't do this, it doesn't do that, everything.
Well, clearly we have some problems. This is why some people would never go to Discover America, and some people would never try something new. So it's time for you wussies to try some Golden Seal on your flu.
That's right. And remember, it tastes worse than Buckley's.
Yeah, well, that's okay.
And if you, when you decide to get some, we're going to give you a discount. So what was that to code again, Martin?
TEP20.
So when you go through the checkout process, you look, there's a little field that says coupon code. You just put TEP20 in there. You get 20% off on the Twilight Everything, Twilight America Topically Everything, the Topically Every Pain, or if you want just the Gold Seal.
Yep.
Golden Seal.
That's
not
it.
The Gold Seal. Cool. All right. Well, Martin,
I've turned you into a complete political rant.
That's right.
Man, you used to be a nice civilized man, but you have been spoiled.
It's it's the elk antler velvet.
Okay.
Let's talk about that again another day.
Yeah. Okay. We'll try that some other time. All right. Wonderful. So, Scott, I would like to sign off with call me at Life Enthusiast Co-op at 1-866-543-3388 or look me up at www.life-enthusiast.com. This is Martin.